Welcome to the Non-Dual Performer podcast. My name is Sam Katadia, and we're going to be discussing performance in all walks of life. And we hope that this podcast will develop your curiosity and your insight around what it means to perform well.
Hey, and welcome to the Non-Dual Performer podcast. I'm here with Sam Katadia. What are we going to be talking about today, Sam?
Well, I thought we'd have a conversation around loss and what is loss really and how all of us respond differently to loss in a whole range of different contexts and life situations. Mm. Now, we've got loss from the point of an athlete losing a game, to people losing jobs, to losing loved ones. What is loss, and is there space to sort of flip our understanding of loss on its head in a healthy way to look at it from a different angle?
Yeah, it's an incredible topic because, you know, it can feel like losing something or an object can, you know, cause so much pain, so much grief, and it's a very interesting opportunity. I mean, how have you seen that in athletes? How have you seen how athletes deal with maybe losing a football game, for example?
First of all, how we respond to the loss is unpredictable. Sometimes there are athletes who just sort of shrug it off and aren't too bothered about it. Some are, you know, will lose their weekend worrying about it, what they didn't do, what they could have done better. Certainly, I remember a lot of that happening in professional football, where footballers would play over and over again in their mind of what they could have done better, and that sense of loss really ate them alive. So, you know, why is that? Because losing a football match can't make you suffer or can't make you grieve. It can't make you mourn for that lost opportunity. So it's clearly our interaction with the experience, or the perceived interaction with the experience. So what I think often happens is if we believe that somehow, again, we've spoken about this on other podcasts, if we believe our well-being to be somehow embedded, attached to that event, or relying on that outcome, then we feel a real sense of loss, because we believe that when we get X, we are somehow going to be happy, we are going to be complete. So naturally, the comeback of it is when we don't get what we want, or the external world we live in doesn't give us the results we want, we somehow, you know, we feel dejected. So, however, there are some athletes that are able to move past the loss in a more stoic or constructive way, and I think a movement in that direction are those individuals who don't see their identity wrapped up in that. They don't see their identity wrapped up in that win. And, you know, we've been talking about this with some of my colleagues around Tyson Fury, who's a professional boxer. And loss can be flipped on the other side. He felt completely isolated, sort of spun a lie, really, when, from what I hear from his accounts, when he won heavyweight championship of the world, he thought that when he got that thing, that somehow he was going to be complete, he was going to be happy, all of his misunderstandings and fears and worries would suddenly disappear when he held up that belt. And actually, he sort of realized, well, it was never there in the first place. So I think usually people who really mourn loss in any shape or form, in a slightly, you know, damaging way or a self-inflicting way, are those who put their livelihoods upon it. They put their well-being, and they attach it to achieving that. I think that's certainly what I've seen in professional sport. Those that try too hard, those that think, "Oh, when I do win, things will be great," and you sort of keep chasing that dream, really. But that fleeting moment of "Yes, I've won" only lasts for long. It doesn't last for very long. Certainly, the loss feels more painful than the equivalent gain, and certainly loss aversion. We are very loss averse as beings. So naturally, when we lose an equivalent amount to that gain, we feel a greater sense of suffering. I think there might be links to beliefs around protecting our bodies and our mind bodies for survival reasons, perhaps why that's why we kind of prioritize not losing more so than over that equivalent gain.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. And have you seen working with athletes who may have a heightened sense of loss aversion, have you worked with them specifically so that they can have more of a constructive movement away from identifying with the need for a specific outcome to come about?
Yeah. I think I used to believe that I needed to get the individual to push outside their comfort zone, to just take more risks consciously. What has shifted in my work now is I want to help people realize that there's nothing permanent that's on the line, that as we've talked about, awareness and the knowing of our experience is unfazed and uncoloured and untouched by whether we win, lose or draw in our experience. And paradoxically, when we become comfortable with the idea of loss, then we're far more likely to go out and take risks. We're far more likely to go out and explore and share, you know, our talents and expertise in the world.
Mm-hmm.
When we know that our true nature is not on the line. If we somehow think that our identity is on the line depending on an outcome, then we kind of retreat, or we attack, or we try too hard. But either way, we're clutching at straws, and that ultimately gets in the way of performance.
It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. The fear of loss, the aversion of loss, creates through the misinterpretation and the actions that follow more likelihood of actually losing, in inverted commas.
Yeah, give you a perfect example of that. The concept of a slump in sport, when teams go on a losing streak because they go desperately seeking to try and change what's just happened. They want to get away from that feeling of loss as quickly as possible, so they start trying too hard. Rather than avoiding that sense of loss, rather than staying in that sense of loss, there's a desire to want to avoid and get out of it, which creates, you know, an extended period of seeking,
mm-hmm.
which actually attracts loss, because you're trying to you're trying to use will and all your beliefs that you have around trying to change a situation to your advantage, when in fact authentic effort is the arises when we're not tying it to an individual. It arises naturally. And I, you know, extending the notion of loss, you know, when people lose loved ones, or people, you know, loved ones are ill or sick, I think when I lost my father in my early 20s, I felt really connected to him, and it was the realization that my relationship with my father was never about his behavior or his appearance or whatever he was doing in my upbringing, that there was a sense of timelessness, peace that I could appreciate when my father passed, and it was really, really powerful. That, you know, I felt like I was wrapped with a warm blanket around me. And so in that situation, sometimes when we lose, and I've seen it in some of the football managers that I've worked with and other professionals, sometimes there's a relief in loss. There's a relief in loss because you're not seeking anymore. There's an equally a few moment when we lose as well as a few moment when we win, because there's a collapse of seeking and separation. And certainly when my father died, it exposed for me a love and a connectivity with everything, that, you know, that all of our known experiences, transient and impermanent, and holds no power over what is always there, which is our awareness, our knowing of the experience. That bit doesn't change, and I'm starting to hopefully articulate a little bit more in my own experience. And again, this is for me what these podcasts are about, to just try and deepen that exploration.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's incredible when, you know, facing losing other people, it's almost, well, it definitely in my experience, it's always been more painful losing other people than losing my own life. Because, you know, we think that, or that there's a belief that the interconnectedness, the love, the presence, the ability to be with that person is just limited to a very almost two-dimensional experience of, you know, being with them in a room, say, for example, but, you know, in relaxing into consciousness without trying to avoid losing what can't be lost, then all the interconnectedness, all the pure presence which is grasped upon is already there. It's already self-arising.
Sometimes I have the conversation with myself, like, oh, I need to be more present. When I say that to myself, I become even less present, because I believe that there's a will there to somehow find in that state. No, the true connection is revealed when seeking stops. And let me give you an example of this. You know, for those of you who are listening, I know it might sound a bit philosophical, but here are some real examples of this, and certainly in sport, when a footballer scores a goal, he's not celebrating scoring the goal. He's celebrating the relief of seeking. That few moment is ecstatic. So if we have an orgasm, it's that release of seeking. When we clinch that business deal, when we resolve a conflict, that few moment is a collapse of seeking, and we're left with a very short moment of space and freedom. But naturally, you know, what we've been conditioned to do is now cotton on to the next object. That's why addictions start. That's why, you know, if a gambler was there to make money, when he was up for a while, he would have walked away, or he or she would have walked away. So it is the perpetual seeking in that few moment, that belief that somehow this object is somehow going to provide me some permanent relief and permanent happiness. Now, what it does is when we acquire that object, it looks like that object gave us that moment of happiness or euphoria, but it didn't. The only moment that was euphoric was the moment of no longer seeking. And it's that we all crave. We have just been led to believe that our well-being is tied into what we have and what we don't have, what we lose or what we win.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the more you look around, that's just not the case, because I've heard of people, especially who lose, or you know, they break up in relationships, or they lose their businesses and are forced to modify their lifestyles. A lot of the time, they're far happier because they are relieving themselves of those trappings.
Mm.
They're relieving themselves of those crutches. They are no longer a burden. So, you know, some of the great sages say the less we have, you know, the more we have, the more outwardly rich we are, the more internally impoverished we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I found that I got caught up in that. I got, you know, bought a house last year, and I've been really sort of working on getting it looking nice, and it's not provided me any extra happiness at all. It hasn't made me happier. If anything, it's another thing in which my life is tied to a certain degree. And obviously there's a practicality of having accommodation, but and being practical, but the ownership of it really hasn't brought me extra happiness. And what it has done is provided me an opportunity to be creative, yes, with the art I'm into and painting and decorating, but no, I can see my mind seeking and looking for the next thing. And it's just the conditioned response to see, to acquire and gain. And then when we gain, we become very, very loss averse. We become very attached to the things in which we've acquired and the things we've attached our identity to.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like the acquisition of things or objects completely trap us in needing to maintain some kind of ownership over this concept, which then basically creates that loss aversion, and none of it's real, though. None of it's real at all. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, even owning a house, it's like, what do you really own? Like, it's like, right now we're sitting in my flat. I absolutely fucking love my flat, but at the same time, it's not really my flat. It's like none of it is owned by anything. There is only the pure presence of right now, and within that, you know, like you said, Sam, you know, you can easily get trapped in this aversion of losing something which you have. But even in having, that's just another belief.
Yeah, and you know, bringing it back to people that we may lose it. Do you lose that? Of course you do, and people grieve, and because if you've got a beautiful connection with someone, you're not limited to lose that connection. I think that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you don't grieve when you lose someone in an authentic way, that though that person was just an object, that's why I'm grieving. But often when you look at some cultures, they celebrate death.
Mm.
They see it as a new you know, a transitionary moment for that being. It's not seen as a lost object. It seems as a passing. So again, it's quite a Western belief that death is morbid, and you know, when we die, you know, that's it. And we don't know that. No one's ever experienced death. You know, we're told a lot about it, but no one has ever experienced it. No one has. Mm. No one. Everything we're experiencing is only our perception and our space that we reside in. And the way death is construed, there are many different angles, you know, from the spiritual approach to, you know, nature and the Druid approach and going back into the cyclical nature of the natural world. So really there's lots of interpretations on death. So it shows you there are no one, I guess what I'm pointing to is there are no rules set in stone in how we engage with loss. And certainly in my and all is fine, all is well. There are no wrong ways to deal with loss. If we are thinking that there is a wrong way, then we're placing a judgment upon it, which ultimately is resistance. If you're saying, oh, I better get all non-dual about how I deal with death, you know, that's yeah. That's an intellectual trick. It's a trap. Being non-dual enough. It's like the wave trying to find itself in water.
That's a corker, that one.
Yeah. And that was Rupert Spira. Mm. And but I absolutely love that. We can't find ourselves in ourselves. We can't outwit ourselves, because we are ourselves. There is one happening experience right now. And I think loss is a real eye-opener to that, because, as I said, in my experience with my father, when I lost my father, I felt closer to him than I ever done. Really connected and had a deep connection with him, because those timeless moments where you shared in love and you were connected weren't limited to a mind-body. They weren't limited to my father. They weren't limited to me. They were shared. They were shared in that moment. And that didn't belong to my dad. It didn't belong to me. It was a collapse of seeking. It was a collapse of all. I want my dad to feel like this, or my dad wants me to feel in a particular way. It was a moment of complete meeting of minds with no judgment. And they're the moments that are the window into insight on who we are, you know, and knowing thyself. Loss is a wonderful teacher, and no doubt as we go through what is an impermanent world, we're all exposed to loss, and kind of knowing it's going to happen rather than clinging to it is also really relieving, because there's no getting out of it. There's no getting out of experiencing the fading of objects and what we know. They arise and they dissolve. They arise and dissolve from where they came from.
Yeah, I mean that's a really beautiful thing to remember, because often like this idea of loss can basically ruin the experience of the initial thing which you've just gained. So for example, I don't smoke now, but I remember being addicted to cigarettes, and as soon as I'd start a cigarette, I'd already be missing it, and thus the whole thing of smoking was completely pointless, because you're just there, you know, already missing something which you're trying to take part in right now. So it's just like completely it completely ruins the experience of things.
Yeah. If we think cigarettes provide me with comfort, then it's that moment of few that's the comfort. It's just we misappropriate that relief in the object. So if someone's an alcoholic, they will drink often to the point where they no longer seek that, and that's ultimately what the addict is craving. It's the release of being prisoner to the object.
Mm-hmm.
It's a call to home, wanting to come back home, which is the bit in us that has never changed since the day we were born and will always be there. Again, deep sleep is a great example. We don't fear deep sleep. We don't feel a sense of loss when we fall asleep. We actually look forward to it. We look forward to drifting off and being in a timeless space where we're not in, you know, a hard objectified world. We are very much in that true sense of self, or true self. And deep sleep is a great example. We don't fear losing anything in deep sleep, do we? We don't fear losing time, or some people do, but we don't fear losing the objects that we're experiencing in waking state. We find deep sleep very relaxing and rejuvenating. So, you know, we've got to look at loss always again from a point of truth rather than belief. And again, the more we do that, the more we actually thrive in the world, enjoy our life, enjoy our relationships, do things that we love. Because ultimately, if we know that we haven't got anything to lose, then we wear our heart on our sleeves and we dance through life. You know, as Alan Watts said, you know, a dancer doesn't dance to get from one side of the dance floor to the other. You know, a writer doesn't write to, you know, complete his blank pages. It's a dance. Knowing that, knowing thyself, allows that to blossom. It's not the other way around. It's not right. I need to get non-duality. I need to get these techniques. I need to deal with loss better in order to flourish. It's knowing and parking that, not avoiding it, being, exploring being in your direct experience will naturally will infect and inform how you interact in ultimately your true self.
Yeah, that's absolutely beautiful. And just to finish off, if someone is going through loss, could you share some questions or some exploration that could really help them? And again, remember, like, if you are experiencing loss, you know, don't try and experience loss better, or like try and be more non-dual about it, because again, you know, that takes you further away from your own exploration. So are there any questions or any tips that could help someone?
Be completely faithful to your immediate experience and just be in that. See where that takes you. Don't try to, there will be beliefs of how I should feel, how I shouldn't feel coming up. That's happened to me, which is fine too, but be very faithful to your direct experience, because ultimately you can't get it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And in that knowing, we can only be our best. We can only bring our best.
Amazing. Okay, thanks so much, everyone. See you next time.
Cheers. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into my podcast channel for this episode. Hope to see and hear from you all soon.